Welcome to the Fabric Podcast. Maybe you've noticed this, but it seems like people can be so people-y. That messiness of togethering can be a challenge, but it's also what makes life so rich. We've been making some extra space for the sharing of stories lately in hopes that they reveal that beautiful people-iness and inspire us to be our best people-y selves, all while connecting with others and what we might call God. In this episode, we welcome back Chris and Greg Meyer from their time of sabbatical and get to scratch the surface on some of their stories and reflections. You'll also hear some thoughts from Melissa Locke as we wonder at all of these tales of togethering.
People are so people-y. As I thought about this and we're welcoming Greg back, I was remembering a little mini story of my own. I remember being at the office on some weekday, and I was struggling. It was probably around some of the inevitable messiness of groups and trying to support them, or maybe it was about realizing I couldn't make everyone happy. He listened. He does this thing with his fingers. He listens. And then he was silent, and then I saw this like tiny little corners of his mouth going up, and he said, "This church work would be so great if it weren't for the people." Yeah, you guys, and me, probably really, really me at that moment. But I needed that laugh and that perspective and that simple reminder. Because, of course, when we get together, all our particularities and our indifferent needs and personalities and expectations and all the stuff comes. And you know what? We know that is why we love this and hate it sometimes, but that is what makes us strong and resilient and rich and growing. Welcome again. Today, again, we get to do one of those best things that helps us really savor being humans, being people-y people together, and that is storytelling and listening. And why? Why do we do this? So many reasons. On the top of on your Sunday paper, there's a piece that I just think captures a lot of the reasons, not all of them. I just want to read that with you. Take a look at it, and maybe one of them jumps out at you today. Storytelling is being human together. This is by this human, Mark Iaconelli, this book that's been guiding a lot of our thinking around this series. We tell stories to savor the pleasure of living. We share stories to help one another remember who we are and what matters. I think that might be what happened in the office for me that day. We tell stories to weave our lives together. Sound familiar? We tell stories to keep our souls intact. To keep our souls intact. That's not always easy, is it? So, we're here again today to do all of those things. And I want you to just put your hand on your sweet body, your chest, and your heart space here. And just make some big circles. We are here, we're being here, and we're bringing all the things, all the ways it's supposed to go, the ways it's supposed to be, the ways we may thought things would be, or that we would be, the world would be, the ways we wish it was, the things we care about, so many things and people that are cared about, represented in your bodies in this room. Those are all here with us. And as we keep making this circle and kind of make it a little smaller, coming in towards where your heart is, see if you can feel that heart beat. I can actually feel it maybe in my hand. And remember that we have this beating heart in this wonderful bag of bones that we get to live with and love with and be loved with. And that is a great privilege, and there's nothing to prove. Just a life to live, just a you to be here with us, for us. So may that be so today as best we can. Help us glimpse back to that space when we need to, where there is nothing to prove. Just a chance to be present for this life that we get to live in this beautiful world, this hard world, this breathtakingly, heart-achingly beautiful world. Okay. Are you ready for some stories?
I'm leaning on a skinny jack pine that clings to an outcropping of rock. Although I'm facing inland, I can turn my head and see water beside me and behind me, both sides. Low blueberry bushes are scratchy under my knees. I don't want to squish them. We still have a gusty breeze. It feels good. The sun is filtering through the pine, creating dancing shadows on my page. This is a layover day in our Boundary Waters adventure. The conversation running inside of my head is, you can choose. Relax into this day. You have nothing to accomplish. But I feel slightly anxious. I must make the most of this. How can I hang on to this? What am I learning? Some wisdom from Robin Wall Kimmerer, shared in her book, Braiding Sweetgrass, reminds me, when you have all the time in the world, you can spend it not on going somewhere, but on being where you are. So I stretch out, close my eyes, and listen. I try it. I close my eyes, relax, and just listen. Pines sigh in the breeze. Hollow, gentle burbles of tiny waves nudge against rock. Rhythmic, repetitive. The brief slap of our rain tarp. The ringing of my inner ear. Short, staccato, gull cry. Distant tremolo of a flying loon. The dry rock faces of this campsite are textured with clusters of crispy, frilly, cup-shaped leaves. Dull browns, grays, and cream patterned with black shadows and dots. This is rock tripe, a pioneering lichen that takes decades to grow, laying the groundwork of soil on the rock face where ultimately ferns and mosses might begin to grow. Although crisp when dry, when it rains, these lichens suck up the moisture, change color, and expand into soft, rubbery little cups of water. I've brought my colored pencils along on this trip. Sketching always helps me, really brings me into the details of something that I'm observing. As I draw, I'm reminded that I've read that rock tripe in Asia is known as the ear of the stone. I wonder, what have these ears listened to throughout the decades in this spot? What are these lichen ears hearing now? I have to say, when I was sitting watching y'all come in today, I'm happier to be here than I even thought. I was watching some very fashionable young people walk in and watching the smiles and the greetings, and it was just a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun to see every one of your faces here, and I want to say a special thank you for the gift of the sabbatical that you gave us, and I hope that your sabbatical was as rich and fulfilling as ours was. And I also thank you for this invitation, although when Melissa first approached me, I said, no way, I haven't even had a chance to start connecting anything. But I am grateful for the chance to share just a glimpse of some of our experiences today. The reading I just gave was a chunk out of my journal. Sabbatical for me was a pause, a time to refresh, to reflect, and to reset. And I'm a person who can spend a lot of time and energy thinking too much and listening too little. So getting outside wakes up my senses. It helps shift the focus from me onto all that surrounds me, the more than me. And really paying attention acknowledges the myriad of teachers who surround me. I have so much to learn. So I paused and I practiced humility and openness, trying to listen, see, smell, taste, and touch deeply. August 15th, our anniversary. Emerging from the Portage Trail on the shores of Jitterbug Lake, we were met by a thick crowd of cattails, sedges, and rushes, circling the shoreline and expanding far into the lake. We had to push rather than paddle our canoe along a narrow trail through the vegetation, winding past pitcher plants with slippery ruby throats, open and waiting for foraging flies. Jitterbug truly belongs to the beaver. We spotted three active lodges, domes of stick and mud. We could tell they're active by the scattering of fresh aspen branches with telltale sharpened beaver tooth tips. There were several places where the rushes and cattails were curiously flattened into beaver-sized snack bars littered with the leftovers of water lily tubers and cattail tubers. When we finally broke out of the cattails into the center of the lake, there was no expanse of open water. Instead, a flotilla of white water lilies spread out in front of us. The day was cloudy, the air was humid and heavy and close, and we began to paddle through the lilies. As we did, a slight breeze lifted a light, sweet aroma. As we continued to move, the scent grew stronger, the perfume of white water lilies. I've never smelled a water lily, and in fact, I never even imagined that that was a possibility. I was stunned. And yet now I have to say that even though I never expected this, this light, sweet fragrance is imprinted on me and remains with me as one of the true wonders of our sabbatical. I want to continue to practice my pause, to lift my gaze, to keep on learning and look around me, find the teachers that surround me as I navigate moving back into my life. So thank you.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you so much. What a sensory experience, even here in this room, that we got transported to. So, does anyone use a clock radio still for their alarm in here, besides me? Some of you, okay, good. A little while ago, mine got, the tuner dial thing got bumped, and there was just like stuff, and I was tired. I realized, okay, I'm going to try to set this for something better, you know, that I'm going to wake up to. And it just reminded me, there's so much weird stuff out there on the radio, right? Some toxic stuff, some just what is that stuff, and a lot of static and noise. So, you know, I had to try to find a spot to tune it in. And I think that our brains are wired with these antennae, too, for stories. Like, we just work on stories. We pick them up, good or bad, helpful or not. You know, we're sucking them in all the time, and they're all around us trying to get our attention. And we need stories to situate ourselves, to kind of make sense of where we are right now. Like, what is... orient myself for the day, who am I in this world? And so these stories are always working in us, and some of the stories that have dominated our individual and collective airwaves are less than helpful. They're killing us, in fact. Stories that are based on illusions, based on these mirages of separation, of supremacy, of scarcity, just to name a couple. And these stories have power on how we show up in the world, on what they create. They create the world. So it kind of matters what stories we're tuning into. And the good news is we can change the station, right? When we notice that there might be a more helpful story right now for me to be tending to tuning into. Last week I suggested that stories that are, and I really still hesitate to even say this word, that are true. I mean, we don't ever talk about what's truth here, you know, like with a capital T, but we always are looking for it, right? We're wondering, how do I connect with what is, you know, what is actually going on in this world, in me? How am I made? How are we made? What are we a part of? So that's what true means in this case. This, you know, not, it's not accurate or exact. It's aligned. It's tuned in to that what is, to that more than me that Chris talked about in her story. It's not making stuff up, okay? So even though we can't grasp it and articulate it, we put our antenna up and we try to tune in and we help each other keep doing that. The Israelites tried to tune in. They called this, aligning with I am, with Yahweh, a word that I don't think you can really say even very easily. So I thought it might be helpful to remember, how do we maybe recognize a story that is tuned into that more than us, to that big love? So I want to talk through a couple of those again today. The first one is, these stories will tend to right-size us. I don't know about you, but sometimes I get a little puffed up with my own sense of self-importance or my own ideas about what I can have an influence, what I can control. And I think a tuned-in story might help reveal, you know, that I hear from someone else or who's tuned into themselves, might help reveal a blind spot that I've had, that I needed to hear. And in that way, it almost brings me back up to size, right? And I think a tuned-in story will often offer us a more generous interpretation of who we are, a more loving one than we even offer ourselves. So right sizes you. Also, tuned-in stories, boy, I heard this in Chris's, they reveal connection, reminding you that you are a part of, not apart from. And I want to show you a picture story again that I shared a couple weeks ago. And I want you to look really closely at this. There's this sunflower. So Jeanette Mayo shared this, took this, saw this in the first place, which is miraculous. Jeanette is part of Fabric and part of so many things behind the scenes. So look closely. Do you see that drop? There's two different drops, and they both reflect this life. Look at that. Life reflected from different angles from each of these individual raindrops. Reflected in a way that, you know, I've never even imagined. I never realized you could see that in a raindrop. I've never looked that closely. So when we stop and look and tune in, new awarenesses and possibilities become part of our toolbox, part of our the way we approach the world. And they reflect back all that we're part of, this beauty, this amazingness. So I think stories that we, as we tune into them, have this special power. Like, you can tell me I don't need to be afraid and that I'm connected and not a lone ranger, that I can't just do it all. But it's the stories that help me feel it and help it kind of sink into my bones, get past all the armor that we tend to put up. So I think that it's kind of like becoming part of your operating system. And maybe that's why Jesus and so many wisdom teachers use stories, so many stories, so that that truth about what is, who we are, and how we're connected could actually get past that armor and begin to sink in and become a part of how we show up in the world. It helps us hold on to that humility and that openness that I heard reverberating in Chris's story, that posture that we can have as we tune in.
Yeah. Hi. Thank you. So we are running a little late, but I won't be as long as I normally am, okay? So first of all, I just, like Chris said, I just have to say thank you. Thank you, thank you. The gift that you gave Chris and I with that sabbatical is absolutely amazing, and I hope you all get something like that at some time. It was just huge for us. The stories I have to share are probably pretty similar to Chris's. We probably could share a lot of the same stories, but you know, a couple of them that I'm not going to share with you right now because I want to hold on to them for a better time, but just like little glimpses is coming out on the deck of our sailboat. We were anchored up in the Apostle Islands at 2 in the morning just to take a quick glimpse at the stars and discovering that the northern lights are out. Just doing their unseen by the vast majority of people thing night after night after night. Or 4th of July, sitting alongside a lake in northwestern Minnesota and a couple of lawn chairs watching the fireworks, you know, round and about all over the place, sitting next to a 94-year-old woman who was born and grew up in what is now known as North Korea. And listening to her, as she holds my hand, reflect on what this all means to her from her very hopeful and tragic and enormously change-filled life that she's experienced, and what this independence means to her. Or spending the vast majority of those 3.5 months with one person, Chris. Yeah, and it's celebrating, as she alluded to a little bit, our anniversary on our probably favorite campsite deep, deep in the Boundary Waters, where we had coincidentally been camping 40-some years ago when we were newly married. But it really isn't about these particular stories, is it? It's really about those moments. It's about that we took and that we had time to take to experience them, to be present for them, to be there when they showed up. Sabbatical isn't about doing or not doing anything. Sabbatical is about catching your breath. It's about being away from the, you know, ever-present what's next long enough that you actually start to realize you get to choose what's next. You know, I don't know that I know that I didn't figure out everything. In fact, I'm not sure I figured out anything. But what I did get was some practice of being more present where I was choosing to be. Now, I just have to add that I don't know what you feel like in your daily life, like you're not nearly as present as you want to be. And I just say, don't beat yourself up too much for it. I mean, that's hard. I don't even know how impossible it is. Your life is full of some really big stuff. It's keeping you busy. You are doing a lot of important things that are keeping you busy. That's okay. It's okay. You won't always be present. But we all need to find times and we need to find ways to be more present. And we can help each other do that, right? Help each other do that. So that's key. So what you did was an enormous opportunity. And let me just illustrate that by telling you just about a few seconds on my first day. Okay, so June 13th, our last gathering, I went home. Chris was gone. She had prearranged long before this an event with some of her old high school friends in Utah. So I'm home alone. I wake up on the 14th in the morning. And just this, like, lightness, like, wow, y'all. But I had a bunch of errands I had to run. So I'm driving around. It's a hot day, 90 degrees. Windows are down. I'm driving, and I remember I was going down Bloomington Avenue, and all of a sudden, I heard this really loud noise and realized it was me. And I was yelling, I don't have to do anything. And I don't know if I scared the people on the street, but I... Like, it just amazed me. I didn't know that was in there. And it wasn't because I don't like what I do or because what keeps me busy all the time takes away from my humanity or away from the world, because they don't. I mean, it's actually really helpful to me. And it isn't because I didn't have anything to do. In fact, I was on my way to Home Depot to get some spare parts so I could install a dishwasher in my daughter's house. It doesn't mean that you don't like what you're doing. It doesn't mean that you don't have anything to do. But I hadn't, in 40 years, had a time when I could choose, you know, more than, not, you know, for a day, yes, or for a week, yes, or maybe 2 weeks, you get to choose what you want to do. But for a whole, bleep this out, you know, summer, that was amazing. Anybody feel a little jealous? I mean, I feel a little jealous. But anyway, so space to choose. Space to choose doesn't mean that you don't do anything, but that you are available to choose what shows up. And that's not a profound insight, but it is exactly the mundane wonderfulness that makes life so sweet. So Chris and I are sailing a couple weeks later out on Lake Superior. And as it turns out, we ended up in Bayfield at the marina overnight, and next morning, we got some errands to run, so we're going to run around the little village of Bayfield. And usually, like, we do this stuff as fast as we possibly can because we don't have enough time. So we're like, you know, get that done and get out on the water, right? Get out in the islands. But this time, yeah, no big hurry. I mean, we had somewhere to go, but we'd get there. And if it wasn't today, it could be tomorrow. It really didn't matter. I mean, this is fantastic. So we took our time. And we ran into some people that were just kind of amazing. I mean, people that in most cases we'd never seen before and we probably will never see again, but we got to be present with them. For instance, there was Janice Olson, the canvas maker, the gardener extraordinaire, who is gentle and trusting and wise, and you just knew you wanted her as a friend. Or there was Jean, who runs the little deli, and she runs everything all by herself. She makes everything. She sources everything as locally as possible. And you can tell, because you won't get through there without having a conversation with her, that she cares way more about her customers than the money that they spend at her shop. And then there was, that was Kathy. And then there was Jean, who was on the little tugboat. She's from Ohio. They'd come all the way from Lake Erie. And somehow that conversation with Chris ended up around fabric, and she was so interested and wanted to know more, and she wondered why there wasn't a fabric where she lived. And then just down the dock, there was, what were their names? There was David Cooper and Ruth Taylor, and they were just across the pier from us, and never heard them before, but just those quick conversations where you go deep and you go fast, and fabric came up again, and they too, they couldn't know enough about what we're doing, because they needed something like that in their lives too. And then there was Jim. We were finally ready to cast off to get out, and Jim comes walking down the pier, and Jim is 95 years old, And he had been sailing the Apostle Islands for as long as I've been alive, and I'm sure has stories to tell you all day long, but he didn't really bother to tell them because he was interested in us and our boat and what we were doing. And after a good, sufficient conversation with him, we left and we told him we were dedicating our sail that day to him. And he seemed to be touched by that, and we felt honored to be able to do it. You know, that was just a couple of hours, but we had the possibility of seeing. We had the possibility of seeing people because we had the possibility of being present for them, to be able to be there for who showed up, for what showed up. And, you know, just what an incredible gift that is. The world is full of problems. I know it. We face them all the time, right? But the world is also full of amazing people. This room is full of amazing people. Let's do something with that. So anyway, Chris and I left Jim. We motored on to Presque Isle Bay on Stockton Island because there was absolutely no wind. And we got there, and we had about the two-mile stretch of white sand beach all to ourselves. This was the middle of the week, hardly anybody there at all. We dropped our anchor in about 15 feet of this unbelievably clear water where you could see every grain of sand at the bottom. And as I leaned over and looked at it, I only had one wish, that I could see and be seen as clearly as that. And I think at least on that morning, I had had some good practice. So why do we do church together? Why do we bother to be a community except to learn how to choose to be over and over again with each other, with this world, with that which is that third strand that has chosen to be with us and always chooses to be with us. Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. We hope this podcast sparks conversation in other parts of your life. If you're looking for meaningful connections, there's a Fabric group for you to try, whether you're in the Twin Cities or not. Tag @FabricMPLS with your wonderings on social media and find resources on our website, fabricmpls.com.